What I need to do is hone only those skills for anticipation, perception, recognition, comprehension, projection that drive my essay. So I'm only going, what? Was that a gunshot? Rather than going around and every car that backfires, I'm returning fire. And that's what happens. What happens is somebody says, if you're more aware, so you end up being the Terminator. You're Arnold Schwarzenegger looking around for everything. And guess what? It takes too much time. Two, your environment is full of cues and clusters that go nowhere, that are meaningless. So if you don't assign weight or importance to certain pre-event indications and cues, then what you're doing is constantly searching for danger. And Brian, what happens when you constantly search for danger? Sooner or later, you're going to find it. And you're all passive.
Welcome to the Left of Greg podcast. Hello, and thank you for tuning in to the Left of Greg podcast. I'm Brian Marin, the host and creator of the show. As always, I will be joined by human behavior expert, Mr. Greg Williams, who the show is affectionately named after. Here on the Left of Greg show, our goal is to increase your advanced critical thinking ability through a better understanding of what we call human behavior, pattern recognition, and analysis. If you'd like to find out more about what that is, you can check the episode details. If you have any questions or would like us to cover a specific topic, please reach out to us at leftofgreg@gmail.com. Today we're defining something that a lot of people talk about called situational awareness. We start off by giving some historical context to the term, and we explain the standard definition of what situational awareness is, as well as what it isn't. During the episode, we talk about how the main elements of situational awareness, which is perception, recognition, and understanding, is missing a key component that will help you conduct predictive analysis. That component is anticipation. What we bring up during the episode is the idea that by honing your skills in anticipation and perception, you are far less likely to be surprised by an unplanned event. Please don't forget to follow us on social media. You can find the links in the episode details. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please tell your friends about it. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you enjoy the show. All right, Greg, we'll go ahead and get started today. Busy week, and we're going to be on the road next week, and we've got other stuff lined up. And thank you. I just want to start out by thanking all of our listeners, and we appreciate it. We've got a nice little growing audience. Please reach out to us if you have any questions or share some of the episodes with your friends. You know, we do appreciate those of you who've been reaching out and giving us feedback on some of the episodes. It's been great and allows us to talk about things that you all want to hear. So I wanted to start to make sure I give a shout out to our listeners, because we just jump into things and go and go and go, and sometimes forget that people are actually going to be listening to us. They're just not on the call right now. But the idea is today we're talking about what is a lot of people talk about now today, and it's called situational awareness or situation awareness. But this is a topic that, you know, we talk about and we teach, but in a much different manner, in which a lot, which it's grown to today, which is kind of interesting. And I wanted to briefly hit up this kind of term, and we'll give our definition of the term, which falls in line with what the standard definitions really are. But this is something, a term that's even though it's been around for a really long time, it really wasn't starting to get used until about 100 years ago or so, specifically, you know, in the military with pilots and pilot has to have situation awareness within his environment to fly the plane, but it's also interacting with machines while it's doing that. So it gets a little bit more complex. And then, as you kind of move forward, you know, John Boyd really hit on situational awareness with his OODA loop. I think, you know, you could probably call SA the first part of that OODA loop, observe, orient, maybe even decide. But he kind of hit on that, and it still stayed in sort of the pilot community and then the computer industry. And so that's sort of where it sat. And then all the way up until literally the 80s and 90s, when a lot of folks really started studying it. And I know you had, that's when you were doing it too. Yeah. And had your version and your six domains for the comprehension part, which we'll talk about. But the idea is I'll put some links up in the episode details. There's some great stuff that really got started with different human factor studies, specifically within the Air Force. And this Dr. Micah Ensley, she was the chief science officer for the Air Force. And, you know, she kind of did these human factor study for people to understand how to interact better with machines, right? And then other people. And, you know, what she said is situational awareness is the perception of the elements in the environment within a volume of time and space, the comprehension of their meaning, and a projection of their status in the near future. And that was been out there. She kind of wrote that down in her stuff, but that was sort of the term at the time already established. And I just mention her because there's other people, because they really did a lot of groundbreaking research. And then along with folks, even like on our advisory board, Dr. Joan Johnson, doing the human factor stuff with the tactical decision making under stress with the USS Vincennes attack. I mean, this all is kind of everyone's in the same orbit of what they're talking about, because it's decision making. But before you can decision make, you got to sense make. And in order to sense make in your environment, you have to understand what it is that you're seeing. So there has to be some perception, there has to be some recognition, and then there has to be the most important part. So what the hell do I do with all this information, right? And that gets into mental models. And then I run into something called barriers to situational awareness, things that get in my way, which are the limits of cognitive performance. And this is what all these folks were finally really trying to study and put down on pen and paper and put some terms to it. And you can go back and read, because they were even trying to figure out, well, what do we call this? Well, is that situation understanding, or is it awareness? What's the difference? And, you know, we talk about elements in the environment, and some of them even made it simpler. They just went, the third thing was things in the world, right? You know what I mean? I was like, I actually really like that, because it's so simple. It's like, look, there's stuff out there, and that affects how you process information and what you process. So there's a lot to unpack here. And I think it's important, because, you know, you were one of the pioneers of this in that same time frame. And you weren't doing it in a lab. You weren't doing it in a controlled environment. You were doing it on the street, but taking into account the science behind it and where this came from. So I just wanted to at least start the conversation there, Greg, and then you can give your definition of situational awareness, and kind of we can go from there, I think.
Yeah, and the meat and potatoes will be that definition when it builds out to practical application.
Yeah.
But I want everybody to listen for a minute and understand that the definition that Brian gave it is an amalgam of all the greatest thinkers of that time saying that, no, change this. No, add that. The murder board was really essential to making that. So you got John Boyd. And John Boyd says, look, this is an understanding of the environment and its elements and how they change in space-time, which was brilliant.
Yeah.
So that's his observe, orient, okay? And that is the foundation, the fundamental necessity for his decision, right? So we went a different way. We said, well, it's sense-making and that problem-solving, and the problem-solving drives the decision, okay?
Yes.
The Air Force pilot said, and this is why we rely so much on NTSB and our training and some of the stuff that we do, Brian, is because they use all science all the time. Think of the artificial horizon. Why was the artificial horizon built? Because people weren't aware of where the ground was in respect to where they were flying in the event that they were using instruments only. Do you see what I'm saying? Which drives the computer end of it? So the technology added a level that took your awareness away from where you were spatially. Right. So go ahead.
And let me sort of ask you this. Yeah, you brought up your point. You said sort of we took the observe orient and then did the sense make problem solve to get to the decision.
Exactly.
Here's why I think that's important. Yeah. When it came to John Boyd, he was a fighter pilot and he was alone
in the cockpit.
Yeah. But although he was talking about all these great complex scientific topics, it was within that context that he came up with that. Well, here's the thing. When you're getting to the decision part, and you're a fighter pilot, there's a finite list of decisions. There's only so many things, because there's only so many things that can happen. When you're out of that situation and you're just out in your environment, the complexity level increases, the number of things that can happen, the uncertainty increases, the ambiguity increases, because when you're in a cockpit as a fighter pilot,
that's why we have to go a different way.
It's less ambiguous than it is when you're on the street interacting with someone.
Right. But we also had the difference. The reason we knowingly and deliberately diverged was because we weren't traveling at Mach 2.
Right.
We didn't have an aileron. Our vehicle didn't drive our decision-making. Our platform wasn't in charge of the response. So Boyd's stuff is wonderful and it's ingenious, but it's like being a swimmer. Okay. You're the only person that matters when, you know, they gunshot fires and you jump into the pool. It's you against everybody else. That was Boyd. And so Boyd was trying to capture what was going on and how he thought that you could outthink a cunning opponent. Well, we did the same thing, Brian. But the problem was that our stuff was chasing somebody through the backyards at night with a flashlight and a handgun and trying not to get killed or kill an innocent civilian and right. anticipate which one was going to be dangerous and which was less ambiguous, right? So the idea is that situational awareness is important for effective decision making in so many different fields. And that's why there's got to be a standard definition, but that's why it's also got to deviate when it comes to stuff like human behavior and human performance. So, for example, in human behavior, human performance, and if you've got a pen, start writing, folks. The first thing is anticipation. You have to anticipate what's likely to occur in certain situations. That's how we build file folders. And we'll go in a little bit deeper. Let me give them topically first. Then the second thing is perception. You observe an incongruent signal or an anomaly or a cue. Okay. Then the third thing is recognition that it is, in fact, a cue or an anomaly or a situation that needs your attention, meaning attending to it. Then comprehension, which is weighing that anomaly, knowing that it is in fact an anomaly and weighting the significance against the operational baseline you're in, because baselines change. And then finally, the projection.
That is
so
projection.
What?
Yeah,
what
I
do with it?
I think you started with projection there.
No. Anticipation.
Okay.
Sorry.
I thought you were talking about something else. I got you. So you're putting
anticipation,
sort of
perception, recognition, comprehension, and projection. So, and why? Because you don't, not everything that's a cue is equally weighted with something that's a danger cue or an operation. So
I'm listening to you explain like this. And what I'm seeing in this, what you're saying is sort of the discrepancy or the difference between that and the way other people are talking about this is you started with anticipation where everyone else starts with perception. And so if you're starting with, and just correct me if I'm wrong, but let me explain this in the way I just received it. If I'm starting with perception, it's the, you know, almost, ooh, a piece of candy. But I need to go back and go, should I expect there to be a piece of candy on the ground when I go into this environment? Because I have to anticipate certain things going in. But doesn't that also affect, because the barriers to good situational awareness are human performance, cognitive performance. Yep. That's why we constantly slam on it. I don't give a shit who you are. There's only so much you can comprehend in your environment. I don't care what level of training experience you have. There are limits, no matter who you are or what you're doing. There are limits for you and there are limits for maybe the person you're chasing or whatever the other person in there as well. But the idea is if I start with, you know, this anticipation.
Right.
Doesn't that then make it more complicated sometimes?
No.
But you get what I'm saying is like you're starting before perception.
Stop with the you guys at home. Stop with the gosh damn need to say it's potato or potato. You got to back off the gas for a minute. So recently, you had a situation. Yeah, it's correct. So recently, especially in Ireland, recently you had a situation where a guy showed up at an accident scene with an AK. He got out of his vehicle, went to the passenger side, brought out the AK, shot three cops immediately, and then get engaged in a shootout with the fourth cop who subsequently killed him. Okay. Those cops never anticipated that traffic crash would turn into the fight for their lives and kill three coppers. Okay. The guy with the AK anticipated that, Brian, because he saw the red and blues and he said, this is my chance. That's the difference. So the difference is the perception comes after the comprehension comes after you have to anticipate what's going to happen likely today. Well, I anticipate the weather. I better take a jacket. Looks like it's turning cold. I anticipate, hey, it's a longer trip than I imagined. I better stop and get gas. That's where your training comes in. Your training comes in to build resilient, fidelity-filled file folders for likelihood. And likelihood means anticipation.
Now, right.
Perception means I'm ambling through in my environment and I'm measuring and assessing those things that I see. Now I look and I see a person with a gas can out in front of the city market with a sign. So I perceive that person. I recognize that that's a potential anomaly and I comprehend the fact that it's likely a hobo that's going to be begging for money somewhere. Okay. Now that perception, recognition, comprehension person. Changes. Yeah, yeah. It's my cock. The perception, recognition, comprehension changes when that person with the gas can is running towards the city market, and instead of carrying a sign, they're carrying a gosh damn road flare.
Road flare. So, yeah.
But that's the essence of training. Look, you can understand all you want, and the definition helps you understand. But when you're sitting around going, no, the period should go here, no, add a comma, what you're missing is you're missing the practical application. So the most important part of situation awareness isn't the anticipation or the perception or the recognition or the comprehension. It's the projection. What do I do with this information? And that's what you get on people all the time.
Yeah.
Look, having a bias for action is so critical in our training.
Yes.
Because somebody will stop. Look, Brian, I read. Every time I'm at the dentist's office or doctor's office, guns and ammo and modern combat and this and that and the other, and everything is keep your head on a swivel. Situation awareness is the single most important thing.
I think if you
this holster, you'll get better essay.
It's like Beetlejuice. If you say it enough times, yeah. It'll appear, right?
Yeah. So the problem with that is that what they do is they stop short of even the definition. They give their own definition and say, if you increase your essay, you'll increase your safety. That's not true at all. That one
it's does absolutely not
correlate
true.
With another, right?
Stop on that. Let's stop on that, please. And go down that because that's I don't think we've clearly articulated that before.
Okay.
And I think that's important for people to hear in a sense that what do you mean when you say that? So what do you mean when you go?
I will tell you, Brian, that hyper alertness leads to paralysis, leads to freeze or flee. Too late in the game. So the recognition, and I'll pair perception and recognition because they're close, and the comprehension that you're in there, the all elements of SA are designed to warn you, but only if your anticipation is prepared for it. If not, you get caught flat-footed, and then what happens is your hyper-alertness, ooh, over there, ooh, what's that? Ooh, piece of candy, like you said before, is making me play pinball in my environment and not attend to what I really want to attend to is my life. I want to drink and I want to screw and I want to drive cars fast and I want to do all those other things. Well, I can't do that, Brian, because what I'm doing is I'm constantly weighing danger. Do you see what I'm trying to say? So that's not how life is. Life is full of danger and opportunity. Got it. But almost all of life is sedentary and relaxed and groovy. So what I need to do is hone only those skills for anticipation, perception, recognition, comprehension, projection that drive my essay. So I'm only going, what? Was that a gunshot? Rather than going around and every car that backfires, I'm returning fire. And that's what happens. What happens is somebody says, if you're more aware, so you end up being the Terminator. You're Arnold Schwarzenegger around for everything. And guess what? It takes too much time. Two, your environment is full of cues and clusters that go nowhere. That are meaningless. So if you don't assign weight or importance to certain pre-event indications and cues, then what you're doing is constantly searching for danger. And Brian, what happens when you constantly search for danger? Sooner or later, you're going to find it. And your all paths are going to lead to Rome. You're going to always be out there looking for danger in your environment, and you're going to miss all these wonderful opportunities that are right there in front of you.
You create a non-event feedback loop, meaning if I sit here and go, all I need to do is be more aware and pay more attention to my environment and I'll be safer. And I start doing that all the time. And I never see anything. I never see incongruent behavior, never see an anomaly. I'm not talking about something, catastrophic. I don't ever see a threat. Then all I'm doing is conditioning myself that if, as long as I stay in this state, nothing will ever happen and I'll end up missing things. Does that make sense?
Because
when you're bringing up this sort of process and everything can be broken down in a sense to a process, but they're not separate, distinct, it's kind of like actually Jason Piccolo was talking about when we were talking to him on his podcast, and he brought up like Jeff Cooper's color codes. He's like, look, that's great, but it's not, now I'm in this state, now I'm in that state, now I'm in this state, now I'm in yellow, now I'm in orange, now I'm in red. It's not how it works.
It can't work that way.
But you can
now listen, to describe it.
What you're talking about here is, but what I can do is I can have, just being curious with my environment is something I can sustain over time. And this sort of way of priming myself for that is what you're calling anticipation, right? I can anticipate certain things so that I'm basically psychologically priming myself for
physiologically priming yourself too. You're bringing those file folders and those chemicals that are in your body that help you. You're bringing them to the forefront. Would you, like, for example, let's go on a 2-mile run for time, Brian, and let's not worry about wearing the proper shoes or stretching or anything else. Let's just go now. Okay. And whatever you've got in your hands, that's what you're running with. Okay. So can you survive that 2-mile run? Yeah, but your feet are going to be sore and your knees are going to knock
you're not going to have optimal performance by doing it that way.
Efficient. Yeah. So the idea is, if you anticipate that, hey, Brian, in 3.5 minutes, we're going to go for this run. Is there anything you want to do? Yeah, I'd like to throw in a stretch and put on some shorts and get my favorite shoes on. So the idea is that that's no different than me making the assessment that the weather is going to turn cold. So I'm going to take a gosh damn jacket. And I'm going to add some fuel to the car because it's further than I thought it was. People make mistakes when they outrun their headlights. So, for example, Pat and Lynn, Shelly's mom and dad, they left. They went to see Craig in Utah, and then they drove back. So the first leg of their trip was longer than they anticipated. Instead of 5.5 hours, it was 9.5 hours. Ooh. Brian, they're in their late 80s.
Yeah,
okay? That's a significant game-changing situation, and thank God they survived. But fatigue and unknown factors on the road, and you know, the weather, and now it's getting dark, and hey, do I have my other glasses, Brian? Those things complicate stuff. So what Boyd said is, Boyd said, here's certain factors you can control, and if you control them in optimal situations, then you'll have the tactical edge over an opponent. We say yes, but there's the reality of the situation that there's a whole bunch of components you can't control. So you have to anticipate the ones that you can perceive, the most dangerous situation that's forming in front of you, then recognize that, listen, this is something that I can do or flee, and then comprehend the weight of the gravity of the situation that you're facing. So then you can project likely outcomes. If you, in your brain does it already,
right?
Your brain does it in flipping nanoseconds. Yeah. When you're bringing that hot cup of coffee up to your mouth, your brain is making the calculation of how to hold the cup, how far it is from your lips. Your body is tensing and sensing how hot is it going to be for my lips and my tongue and move my, and how much of an angle do I need to pour that first drop? So your brain's already doing it. Don't think that it's going to take time and be hard.
Okay. Great point. To kind of tie in everything we were both just talking about, because it sounds a lot more complex and really is. So if you it is complex, but it's something you do all the time. So I like that example, but the problem with, and it was a great example, but the idea with that example is I have to learn that, right? Yes. I have to have some tacit knowledge that this is what I need to do when something is too hot for me to drink, or it's at that threshold where it might burn me a little bit. So if I don't know that this hot cup of coffee will do that to me, I'm going to gulp it down. I'm going to scald the inside of my mouth. So
and
this is where it gets
die. You so, may so, die. Right.
Well, you know, and that's how some of these catastrophic incidents sort of can happen, where it's almost they're not only do I failed to anticipate because I was never going to perceive or recognize anything because I didn't know it. Right. And so, so that's sort of the issue with what we're talking about. And I think that gets to the core of why we kind of see a lot of this stuff out there and are like, this is junk or it's not going to help. It's because if I don't know, if I'm starting with where I don't know how to look for things in my environment, what am I going to do? I mean, I can't just scan everything. I can't look into every corner. I can't do all that. And you know what? You don't need to. So the point is, I think that you're getting at is there's other elements that I can focus on. So this anticipation is, I need to understand that when I walk out the door, technically I could get struck by lightning. What's the likelihood today? Pretty low. You know, it's a nice
and
sunny
so,
sky.
But over time, it's so historically low that you duct taping a colander to your head and walking around with a metal rod dragging a wire to the ground is ridiculous. That's a state that you don't want to be in. And that's the same thing with having a gun, a drop gun, an extra high capacity magazine, two knives, a flare gun. And we see these people. Brian, we used to work with a guy that had a go bag with all of those things that they drug around with them everywhere that they went. And I would tell you that that's no fun in life. The idea is that certain things that you anticipate, you can take into consideration. And if your environment is dangerous enough that you have to carry a gun, that's fantastic. But all of that flipping tires and climbing the rope and doing the rapid reloads aren't going to help if you miss the anticipation, perception, recognition loop. If you don't comprehend that this is a real life-changing and altering situation.
This is why it kind of gets lost on people sometimes when we're talking about what we do. Or they'll see it and go, oh, yeah, no, this makes sense. This is incredible. And so how do I work that into the range stuff that I'm doing? Yeah. It's like, wait a minute. You jumped so far ahead into you're already at a decision and you haven't even properly diagnosed the problem. You haven't even opened the door to the doctor's office, let alone seen the patient yet, right? And you haven't even laid out the different things that you're likely going to use today, right? We're jumping to a decision, right? And we're assuming a lot in that big jump, that quantum leap of logic. You make a lot of assumptions, and those assumptions aren't true. But what they do is create sort of inevitability. So if I go, this person's definitely going to take off. It's like, okay, so we've got some recognition here, right? We're trying to project what would happen.
Yes.
But you know that now, yet you're still going to go walk up and do the same thing. Like, stop, you know, you can get yourself a little bit of time and distance here, but we don't do that. We go, see, I knew that was going to happen. It's like, see what I'm saying? So even when there is recognition, Greg, it's not utilizing the information properly. So the decision doesn't change. It's like, but the whole point is this recognition is in perception, and even anticipation is supposed to help me inform my decision, and I'm not using it. So it's like all of the training and all the experience goes out the fucking window because I don't use it.
So you're again fighting the good fight for your argument that if there's no bias for action, then why are we taking the training? Which I absolutely agree with. So I go back to the car analogy. Most people drive a car every single day of their life. Mm-hmm. And when the dashboard red light comes on, they have two choices: fix whatever's broken, or put a Band-Aid over it until it solves itself. And it's going to solve itself one day when you're on the freeway and you need it the most, and all of a sudden it breaks down. Now, the other part of that analogy for the vehicle is that you're driving around, and all of a sudden, for whatever reason, your vehicle putters to a stop at the side of the road, and you immediately call for a wrecker and say, I want my transmission pulled and have you take all the bolts and rebuild the engine and everything. And then the guy with the wrecker service says, you're just out of gas. That's the other thing is the recognition comprehension cycle is damaged. So if you add human behavior to human performance, what you now have is you have a gating mechanism for how decisions are made in any situation. And extremis only amplifies the necessity for a decision in a better space-time, in a more profound manner, more quickly, right? So all that means is, Brian, training will help you increase your acumen and decrease your time.
So anticipation, in a sense, is something that almost anyone can do within their life and think of. It's almost the what if game, in a sense, but within the realms of reality of what you're in terms of likelihood, what you're likely going to see, right?
Yes.
And you can do that. Okay. So if I have that and I'm anticipating this stuff, now you've got this perception recognition part. Now that can be very difficult because based on your life experience and what you know and what you've learned. And
that's where you need the training.
Well, that's the thing. So what a lot of folks don't get into is that part because it's typically domain specific. So like perception recognition for a pilot is one thing. For a person working with computers is another thing, but you brought up, and correct me to this, the six domains, right? That you created, especially back for Combat Hunter, and it was around before that. But the six domains of human behavior fall into that perception recognition because it's articulatable scientific terms that you can use anywhere, right? And they're observations you've made, some you've already made before in the past.
Yes.
Some maybe you haven't, but you've seen something maybe close enough to where you can do that. You can
make the essence of pattern recognition. Okay.
So Yeah.
And so, comprehension becomes the analysis.
Well, and this is where the mental models come in and schemas and exactly. What people are talking about. So how does that work then? So we don't have to jump into all the six domains.
No, so it's funny because
I saw someone write an article about situational awareness and talking about what the Army uses as their six domains. And I was like, yeah, dude, this is around 20 years ago. Like, what are you talking about? But anyway.
And you're making money on it and you don't even understand it. So let me give you a quick example. And non-attribution, folks, you do your own independent study to prove us or disprove what we're saying. And it's all been proven, so I'll save you the time. But we're operating in a culture during the time, and remember, culture is merely context, where there were five prayer services a day, and that there were minarets and mosques and a muezzin that was doing the call to prayer. And what happened is that the people that were operating in that environment that weren't Muslim or didn't follow the faith were going out on Fridays and they were partying and having a good time and doing their dinner like they're wont to do back in the United States. And that started becoming targets for the terrorists that were, in fact, Muslim, that were, you know, going old school on their ass. And a person said, well, how do we avoid this? And it's like, okay, well, first of all, you anticipate that you're not using culture as context, number one. So polish off your lens, clean off that dirt. The second thing that you're having is you're not perceiving that the reason that this is happening on there is it's not because you're an easy target. It's because they won't accidentally kill a Muslim because they know they won't be out there on the Friday doing the partying. So the recognition and the weighted comprehension will add to you, well, can I project this to other places? Well, yeah, it's not going to happen here. It's not going to happen there. So Brian, what you use is you use the incoming data in the information by first taking a look and see if there's a pattern. Yeah, there's a pattern they're hitting on this day. Then you take a look and you analyze it and you go, so what does that mean? And that's what they're not doing. They're just increasing their situation awareness with nothing on the back end. And so what happens is they go, well, situation awareness, this might be dangerous, so I need a weapon. Well, wait a minute. How did you make that quantum leap of logic and skip over all of these other things that say, you know, so
well, you're arriving at it geographic. Yeah, you're arriving at a conclusion before even...
But it's an unreasonable conclusion.
Yeah.
So people say, where did you come up with geographics? Long time ago, I stole it. And where did I steal it from? There was a caper in Canada right across the border from where I was in Detroit. And they were using geographic profiling. And I looked at that and I go, wow, that's brilliant because bad guys are familiar with areas. But what does that mean? And I said, well, I guess they have anchor points, places that are just for them. And then, well, they do go out into habitual areas, but they're very safe to follow natural lines of drift. Brian, it wrote itself.
Yeah.
So I needed the catalyst of somebody else to come up with the term geographics. Okay, it's like atmospherics. The Marines never understood atmospherics on the East Coast. West Coast Marines got it at hello. So my biggest fight for the Marine Corps was, no, the atmosphere is not this band of air trapped around the it's how things unfold. And you can tell, like, the people in an emergency room when somebody's having a baby, you can tell the atmosphere, right?
Yeah.
And now if I can tell it there, can I tell it when I'm having chai in a foreign country? Can I tell it when I'm on a safari in Africa that something's gone terribly wrong? I can tell it on an airplane because I'm on airplanes every week.
And that's a tie to not only your environmental indicators, but that's also tied to your cognitive performance, your limbic system that's already sensing your environment going, hey, something doesn't feel right here, even though you can't clearly consciously articulate it. You know, that's that man that when people go, oh, I had that feeling, that gut feeling, my hinky button was going off.
Yep.
You know, that's what it is. And what, you know, it's just sensing your environment. That's literally your amygdala just going, hey, you know, there's something up here. I'm picking up on a shift in the feeling or mood here. And because I had to have this a long time ago to stay alive, I'm warning you about that through that feeling.
So it became a domain, Brian. And physiological and psychologically, we can manifest it.
Yeah.
Sociologically, it shows itself. So what am I trying to say? Again, I'll street it up for you. If you understand cuidado, peligro, you're understanding danger words in Spanish. But if those are the only words that I had learned, I can't turn them into a sentence. And I can't make that paragraph to explain something to somebody else and get people to safety. So what I'm doing is I'm anticipating that I'm going to need language skills, but I want to carry on without the training. Why? Because training takes money and time and a long. And so if I'm fluent in situation awareness, or I'm fluent in Gulf Arabic, or I'm fluent in Farsi, I'm going to get farther in that baseline or environment, right? So situation awareness is a tool to be able to untangle the complexity of any situation in any environment, but you got to learn how to do it. You can't just say, hey, I'm going to be more situational. And you know why? Because you're going to be more alert when you die. You're going to be more alert when you get robbed or you get carjacked. And that's not the key. The key is there's a cycle. And once you understand that cycle, then you can look, we don't talk about situation awareness a lot because we're so fluent in it that these five steps become one step. You see,
and this
that's only through training and experience.
Right. And this is part of why some people sort of criticize, not us or criticize it. I mean, criticize this, these different models of situational awareness that are out there because it's complex and because it involves environmental indicators, it involves your mental models, it involves fucking catecholamines and hormones in your body and your limbic system, what's primitive in your DNA versus what you've learned. There's so much complexity in there that you have to refer to it in general terms, right? Even though there's so many cognitive processes involved that are very specific that you can map out and a neuroscientist could tell you about, you can't just go into the detail of that. Like we cover things about the eye and the brain and how you process information. But the point of that is to go, look, you're not seeing everything that you think you're seeing. Yes. There's perception is different than seeing the real physical world, what's happening, the objective world is different than your experience. So people then go, well, what about this or what about that? And I get it. And it's like we do everyone wants the ice cube trays, right? And
they
use this one all the time. And they want the frozen little ice cubes in each one
with
of these
a little
things.
Baby flag on it. That says a thing.
You can't. We still use the ice tray, but the fucking ice is melted and there's water in there. And if you tip it a little bit this way, then some of the other buckets get more full and the other ones empty out. And that's what we mean when we say that is these are complex cognitive processes that you can name. You can go through and go, here's what this means. Here's where that happens. Here's where that happens.
But we choose not to.
But the difficult part, because we do the difficult part is putting it together. And the fucking, so what? How do I do that? And that's more important than understanding, you know, heuristics enough to speak at a university about it. It's complex. It's cool. It's fascinating. Right. But so what? This is what that means. That means that in that situation, due to the limits of your cognitive performance, when that guy pulls a cell phone out of his pocket, you saw a gun. Okay. That's what that means. And because your brain said it's close enough to what I've seen before in training, it's a gun. I need to kill this person before they kill me. There's how many different cognitive processes involved in that decision? You could take one case and study it the rest of your life and still not understand all of them. Okay.
Yes.
But the important part is what we're talking about here is the so what. I don't care if you can tell me what, you know, how much the appropriate levels of cortisol or dopamine and how that affects you. That's not fucking important. The important thing is what was the decision? What did you do? How did you use the information? Right.
As a major league player, as an expert, I spent my entire life creating the expert model. So you don't have to do all that independent study. So you don't have to go back through there. And that's the idea. That's what sets me apart from all these charlatans that are out there just speaking the words, but they don't understand it. I'll give you one. Okay. Sex is an important thing in humans because of procreation. So there's a part of your brain and brain's chemistry that when sex gets really messy and ugly and certain things happen because there's fluids involved and everything else, that your brain tunes it out and you can still stay romantic and stay in the moment to procreate. That exact self-same situation that occurs in your brain and the chemicals happens when somebody vomits or is shot and is bleeding out or has an atrophy during giving birth. So you can fight past the mess and the gore and the hate and get in there and do something. That self same thing. Now it's like cylinders on a revolver. It turns just a little bit, Brian, to the next one. When you witness a catastrophic death of a familiar, somebody that you know, that you can get back up and get into the fight and get out of the situation and go on with your lives. So those mechanisms are hardwired into humans already. Now, sometimes because of the limits of human performance, we get PTS, and we're bothered by this and we can't, or we're so overwhelmed that we commit suicide. But the main body of humans don't. The main body of humans keep marching forward. So all of my research, everything I do is on that main body of humans, not the outliers, Brian, because the outliers were meant to fall away and perhaps
they don't anymore.
Situations not to survive. So what I don't do is sit there and spend all of the class with a glossary and definitions and yes. rate you on the definitions. What I do is I say, this is CPR. It's very hard, but this is Heimlich. It's very easy. Now do me a favor, save a choking person. That's what we've built for almost 50 years now, Brian. And that's what makes it different. So people are out there and go, yeah, well, we focus on, you know, this and that and the other. Yeah, you know what? I don't need to know the fine thread diameter of the nut and the rough opening of the hole. You're making a great point of that. What I need to understand is that if I anticipate and train to anticipate, and I understand perception, and that recognition drives the comprehension that this, in fact, is a pre-event indication of violence, danger, opportunity, somebody's flirting with me, sex, right? All of those different things. Then guess what? I can project that information, and that's my ML or MDCOA. So this shit didn't happen by accident, Brian. These were studies, and it took me years and to get the right things together. And you know what the greatest thing about? Other people paid to study it, and I was given the opportunity to try it in the most extreme environments on Earth. That's what separates us, because it's wonderful having a theory and going to a classroom, but if you never get out into the real world and do it over and over and over again, how can you prove it?
And you brought up these you know, remarkable moments that are outliers or people that people are fascinated with, and you're fascinated with them because it's not normal. It is a remarkable situation.
It's exceptional.
And so we then get focused on that because that's odd. And it's like, well, yeah, that 100,000 years ago, they wouldn't have survived. We wouldn't have had that.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? That they would have been kicked out of the tribe.
And it sounds harsh, but that's the truth.
But that's the thing is, like, now we do. That's why we have all this different stuff. We have more complexity or different variants because people are alive today and procreating, exactly. and they wouldn't have been a long time ago. So it gets a little bit more complicated. And we stick to the simple stuff. Like you said, the big part of the group is what you need to focus on, because 99.99% of the time, that's what it is. And then in those rare, remarkable moments,
right,
if you have the understanding of what's normal, a really good understanding of that, you can then use your own knowledge and skills that you already have to deal with it. It's like,
yes.
And because that gets into the training aspect of what people look at for training. And it's like, well, you're doing this stuff that, like, what you're spending all this time and effort and resources and money into doing something that you're completely unlikely to ever use or see.
Yes.
But it's like, you won't spend that same amount of time, effort, and resources into something that you're going to do every single day. It's just, we don't see it that way, because we go, this is the big shiny thing. And since we don't fully understand it, my opinion is, you know, we do this stuff out of fear, and we do this stuff because
absolutely.
We don't understand it. And so when we don't understand something, we freak out about it, and we got to find a way to deal with it because it could kill. I mean, I think it's just a very primitive limbic reaction to some of these things. And that's what drives our thinking when that's so rare and remarkable that it's unlikely to ever even see that, let alone be involved in the actual incident.
So the inevitability factor comes to play again. Brian, you're so smart, because we create the environment. So we say 9mm needs a brother, and 38 and 380 aren't the brother that they need. So now it's 10mm, which is off of that, but
thing.
The 45.
And then what did everyone come back with after decades of doing that? Going, well, I guess it doesn't matter, because it's actually the only thing that matters is where that round hits. Like, yeah, no shit. I could put a hole the size of a bowling ball in someone, and they could live.
Yes.
Right? If it doesn't hit
a
vital
area, we saw people hit by RPGs that had the nose cone still in their body that was taken out, and they're living a good life today. So the idea, Brian, is that the remarkable becomes the anomalous and the incongruent becomes the cue. But you have to be trained how to look for that, because if you aren't, it's like the first time that you do a Kim's game and you're a little bit overwhelmed, but then all of a sudden the idea comes across you. And remember, it's keep in memory, stupid. No, it's not. It's named after Kim, Rudyard Kipling. Go do your own research, right?
I was
right?
told but, that the Marine Corps sniper community created that. It was keep in memory sniper.
There we go.
I was the one raising my hand, but, like, wait a minute. Isn't this
but what does
book?
That prove? That proves good ideas stick around. And just improving your memory does nothing for you in a situation. But now, what is the cue? Well, I started categorizing tattoos. we would find a dead female sex worker, what we used to call a prostitute, and the damage was significant. And so I had a list of different females that worked different areas, their characteristics, their physical characteristic, but more important, certain outstanding features like a tattoo or a peg leg or a gosh damn eye patch or whatever the hell it was. Why? Because those things helped define that it was this person, not another person. Okay. So that pattern I had to recognize, which would drive with the analysis that this decomposing corpse is in fact this person. But we don't need that now. Why? Because there's stuff called DNA. Okay. So those catalogs, Brian, those huge, vast repositories of information that I had, they're outdated now. But the process is the same, isn't it? So now I use a computer. Now I use big data. Now I use all these other things. So the anticipation is the most dangerous part of police work. Why? Because you're driving up to the scene and you're thinking of all these millions of things that can happen. So if you can tell a cop to calm down at that phase, and that perceiving things like, hey, that person leaving as you're, you know, so focused on showing up at the scene might be a great witness, or they might be the suspect that's leaving the scene. Right. And then you recognize, I'm in the situation. Holy crap, this is a little bit different. There's people that are dead here, and that weighs more than, it's more significant than the previous incidents I was in. So I have to ramp up my game. Brian, it's a process that you train yourself. And it's just like there was a TV show, you know, Love Eaton. There was a TV show where two chefs went to a street, and one went on one house and one went across the street to the other house. And they had to compete with everything that was in the pantry or in the kitchen of those two houses. I loved that shit. Because yeah. What you are is you're handed a shit sandwich said go.
That's
police work. That's life. That's coming home to your husband or old lady cheating on you. That's your kid bombing the math test. That's life.
And that's adaptability. You know what I mean? You really get thrown a bunch of things that you're not used to using or haven't used before in the past, and you got to create order out of chaos, right? I mean, that's what we're doing. That's what we're creating order out of chaos.
Brian, I walk into a chef's class, and I see the one person that has that chef hat, the Boyardee with all the folds in it. And I go, hey, what's with the hat? Why doesn't everybody have a hat? And they're like, well, they're not at his level. So he's the expert. Yeah. Well, what defines him as an expert? And a guy looked at me and said, each one of those folds is a different way to cook an egg, to prepare an egg. And because he knows more about how to prepare an egg than anybody else, each one of those folds, 113 or whatever, 109 folds, make him the expert, because I only know 30 egg dishes. That's brilliant. Brian, if you can't unpack that and take a look at that and go, holy crap, he's talking about file folders. He's talking about tacit knowledge, experiential knowledge. And guess what?
But
I can gain a certain amount of that through the proper training.
Okay.
Education won't take me there, but training will.
But again, you know, and this is, your chef's example is great, and I get it, but it's sort of domain specific, right? That doesn't mean
course.
He can go
Life
work.
Life is domain specific.
Okay, but that doesn't mean he can go. It doesn't mean he can go work on your car. But what it does
exactly, or do a gynecological exam.
If he can, he just might.
The hat gets in the way.
You thought it was you mistook the outfit for
sometimes
a doctor,
and
he was a chef.
We weren't even at a hospital.
that was an alley. He wasn't wearing anything under his lab coat either.
We were abused.
So the idea here's. Here's my point I want to get, because I'm listening to what you're talking about, and everything is about, well, you got to be this subject matter expert. You got to be this guru. You got to have this level of stuff. And the way I would look at it is to use your chef's example, who's a subject matter expert in this domain, and he's brilliant. That doesn't mean he can't take everything that he knows and apply it to a different situation. So can he, I mean, literally you get the car example, there's something wrong with his car. Well, maybe he can take something from his life and know, well, I know from this that this is likely happening, and you know what? It's past my level of what I can do here. And I know, because I'm a subject matter expert and I like to stick to cooking what I do, I'm going to let someone else work on my car. Right. But we don't do that. We go, okay, I got this. You know what I'm saying?
And, exactly.
And
the stuff is the stuff that's least important.
What I'm bringing up here is the question, I guess, would be then, well, you know, we're talking about these different complex subjects and how to do it, and maybe I have some experience in observing or situational awareness, or I thought I did. How do I use what I already know in these? That's what you're talking about, is drawing on my own experiences to then go, to recognize, to perceive in that part in the environment is how do I
but
how
that's
can I do
where
that
you
then?
Have to be shaped by experts. Brian, when you're young and you're a boy or a girl, you run everywhere.
Yeah.
You're good looking enough that you can get in anybody's pants anytime that you want to. And you're clever enough to do that because you've rehearsed it your entire life. That's what life is about. When you're young, you play until the streetlights come on and then you go home. You eat superfluous amounts of food because you're going to be burning it off. You never think of those things. So cognitive acumen is less important, right? But then all of a sudden you start encountering conundrums. Well, how do I get out of the house and get down and get the car started so I can go and party with my friends? Well, those challenges, I now have to meet environmental specialists. So what I do is I meet the kid in my class that goes, oh, yeah, man, you can make a tat with a knitting needle and some heat and some India ink. And I learn these street things that come along. And then somebody goes, yeah, man, but you can get a horrible infection. So it makes more sense to do that. All of those complex things are like a one of those ancient string things that they hang on a wall now, the memory keeper or whatever they call that, God's eye. There's a whole bunch of different names for them. You come to these junctures in your life and you choose those things. I choose what it says in the Bible. I choose what my mom told me. I choose that Uncle Paul always said, never, talk when you eat because you might choke. Those things become lessons. And so then I either learn from those lessons, okay, and I adapt and overcome new situations, or I don't. And if I don't, then I become a failed to thrive and I never live the basement and I'm still living with my parents and they're taking care of me. Okay, well, then you don't have to worry about SA because you're never going to get out of the damn house. But the rest of us have to get a job and the rest of us have to go out and encounter other humans. So what do we model that behavior on? Well, if we're constantly modeling that behavior on the wrong type of subject matter expert, then we're going to continue to make those mistakes. So the difference between education and learning, training, is that we have a skill that we can apply to this situation, but also use the same elements
right
to project it on the next.
Next.
So anticipation now and anticipation for future events is critical. And we don't normally get that on our own. We need a parent or a significant other or a guide or a coach to take us there.
Well, and this gets into the training aspect. And that's why I kind of brought it up and asked a question of what we're talking about. It's like, well, okay, well then what am I supposed to do? And ideally, if I could learn one way to do something and use it in every situation, well, that's magic, right? Because then
that's
I can
science.
Just get really, 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 really good at this one thing
exactly.
And use it in multiple areas. And that should sort of be the goal, right? Meaning, if I have to learn all of these different methods for all of these, you always give the comparison between CPR and the Heimlich maneuver. The Heimlich maneuver is the Heimlich maneuver. It's always been the same exact thing. CPR
so
every few years now, it's like changing. Well, now they're saying, I think it's, you don't even have to actually breathe. I think it's just chest compressions, right?
Right.
And like, there's no breathe. Like it's like,
but you don't need to do it because there's an AED right there on the wall.
Well,
right?
But that's the thing is like we come up with these sort of tactical level solutions, these TTPs, these different policies, and we're missing the sort of big picture on how to do things. And
but isn't it the same with overdoses now? So fentanyl, and this is horrible, and people are dying.
Yeah.
So I read an article, and the article says you as a human being have to get better at being a first responder no matter what your life goals are, because you're going to have a whole bunch of people that are falling out around you that are overdosed, and you're going to have to do something about it. So we've forgotten all the other stuff that we can do to stop the drugs and
right.
educate the people and all that other stuff.
Right.
We're just going to assume
we're just
that
gonna
people
jump
are going
right
to be overdosing around us. You see what I mean? Isn't that the same? So the logic is, Brian, that if I can grasp that there are certain things, science and math and language ability, that lubricate the rails and make it easier for me to get from point A to point B with less friction, and friction is where the danger comes from, right? Then I've got it made. But it takes effort. You got to get up. You got to get dressed in the morning. You got to get out of the gosh damn cave. And you got to go learn. Because first of all, you can't do it from a book. Books are great. And I hear these people quoting stuff all the time. Well, if that book is going to stop a bullet, or you can use the book to hit the guy that's going to, rob and rape your daughter, I guess you got it made. But if not, you're going to have to step out of your comfort zone. You're going to have to, get comfortable, as you say, with being uncomfortable. And you're going to have to learn some shit. Brian, do you need every martial arts move that you've ever learned? Now, there's a couple of really great things about stance and about leverage, momentum, and balance that, that will help you be safe. So the fundamental principles are the key, the core essential principles that people have taken hundreds, if not thousands of years to perfect are more important than the shit that you're reading about right now. So get thee to the nunnery, get out of your comfort zone and go learn them. That's why training is so much more than education. Theory is wonderful. As a matter of fact, our textbook is the theory of HPPRNA.
But those
because we presuppose that you're going to take that knowledge and go out and do it. That's where you really learn something.
No, and that's exactly it. It's okay. This is the core elements. You know, look, read about it. Go try it out. Here's an example. Now you go find your own example. Now, you know, that, and that's not only how
bring me that example to show me that you know it. And here's
a video of us showing you an example of it. Now you go out and find yours. And so that
cosmic gosh damn, what do you call that? Where you go out and you gather something, you know, from each person and then you come back. What's that called?
Pickpocketing, stealing?
No. When you make a game out of it and everybody's got to go out, it's scavenger hunt. So that cosmic scavenger hunt, Brian, is so essential to demonstrate that learning has occurred. It's just the most amazing thing. And do people do it? No, people don't spend their time doing it. And that's how you train your kids, isn't it? And if your kid turns out screwed up, we're constantly looking for this is the school shooter profile. There is no profile. We're constantly looking for this. Look, these pre-event indications make it more likely that this person is going to do this in this time frame. That's training, baby. And training can help those scales fall from your eyes so you can see things as they are in your environment. What does that mean? Prediction can occur. How does prediction occur? There's anticipation, perception, recognition, comprehension, and projection. That's how you do it. And Brian, it's not tarot card reading. It's blackjack, where you can sit down and figure out the mathematical likelihood. Can you do that with humans? Yes. And people are saying right now, well, no, you can't because this means that. No, the standard you're using is kinesic. You're out there using body language and saying the body language is going to solve for X. Now, the body language is pepper on your steak or the barbecue sauce that is in your ramekin that you dip at the end of the day. If all these other things are happening and you have this, it's more likely that this is going to go. That's how it goes. And you know what? All those parlor tricks that people are showing on the videos and on YouTube and all that stuff, back off of that.
Yeah.
That's ends justification for shit you'll never see in real life.
That's what most of this becomes. And because it's so prevalent that a lot of this is what people are doing. And see this situation, if they would have done this, and that's why I do this. And it's like, well, you're just using ends justification to exactly. that there's no... You haven't even tested that process in the real world. So good luck with that. But you know, you get into it goes back to, I mean, you brought up a bunch of topics and you especially with the drugs and the fentanyl list. I just got one for the insurgent school. It's like, hey, you know, this is the new way to talk about, you know, drugs with your kids. And I clicked on it and I'm like, this is the same. It was actually great information, but it was like, hey, talk to them about this. Explain that shit. And it's like it, but there's nothing, there was absolutely nothing new in it. I mean, the same way I remember my parents talking about certain stuff. There's a lot more colorful language in what they used and a lot more about calling me an asshole, but the idea was that some of the stuff was still there. Well, you know, I mean, it's the new shiny object. It's the new threat. This is all new, and you haven't seen this before. And every time we do that, every time we fall into that trap, well, now it's like, well, now we got to relearn everything. It's like, no, you don't. There is no new. Yes, fentanyl is the big one. So in 5 years, it's going to be something else, just like it was 5 years ago. You know what I'm saying? In 5 years before that.
The same basic principles, the delivery system.
But you brought it up.
Paraphernalia.
You brought it up with the point I was making about this. You brought up the training and then you even talked about your kids. It's like, you know, now it's, well, TikTok's the problem. It's the cell phones. It's like, no, it's your fucking parenting is the problem. You're like, that's what it is. Like, I'm sorry.
But why don't we talk about that?
Well, same thing. Every generation does it. Oh, yeah. Everyone's a snowflake pussy these days. It's like, yeah, hey, you made them that way. And now you're saying, I don't want my kid to have access to this. And I don't want them to see that. And they can't have this. And this is a danger. So you want to nerf the world? Okay.
They got a ribbon for 19th for showing up. You know, exactly. You can't have in the same space.
You can't complain about the problem and play the victim and then also be the one who's contributing to the problem.
I mean, but you can't. That's called being American, right? And the idea is this. So how many times do we got to read that a kid found your gun and shot your other kid?
Yeah.
And then you talk to those persons and you say, you know, it's a gun. Yeah, I got it. And you know, you should have it locked up. Yeah, I bought the lock. I actually have a gun case. So why was it under the seat? Well, it's a different circumstance. You don't understand. I was going to this high crime area and I just forgot to put it back. What is that? That's human behavior. We could have predicted that and anticipated that. And human performance. Your limit of human performance is you're a lazy asshole and you didn't put your gun away. And I'm sorry that your kid's dead. But we can apply that knowledge to so many situations. We understand that if we don't control portion size, we'll overeat. We understand that if everything on your plate's the same color, you're probably going to get fat and die from some kind of thrombosis. We can anticipate that smoking is bad for you in a number of ways and lack of sleep. So stop going that each of these are individual spirals that we have to control and understand that there's an underlying architecture through all of it. Excess is never good. Extremism is never good. Hypervigilance is never good, right? Once we start casting those away, we come down to core competencies. And that's why going back to Milo and Hoberman and in the gosh damn sphere, the idea was behind it that if you take a 360 tempered, measured approach to danger and opportunity, you're going to be smarter and you're going to be safer and you're going to be harder to kill. And that's why we can't just throw the OODA loop up as a problem solver. We can't just say resilience. The new word is grit, by the way. If I read grit one more time today, I'm going to punch myself in the genitals because, you know, all we're doing, Brian, is renaming it.
Saying,
wow, it's grit. Well, there was a movie called True Grit. I remember it with John Wayne.
Yeah.
And before that, I'm sure
is that what you're talking about? No, I mean, that's the
we get paid. We get paid by dusting off the shit that's been around forever and saying it's ours and then throwing it up as if it's new and emphasizing the third word instead of the first word. That's not training. That's believing in a bunch of hyperbole.
Yeah.
Training means that you have to learn skills and then go out and apply them. And each time you do them, you'll get better at it. Presuppose that you took the training from a credible source. And I know that's hard nowadays.
That,
holy shit. Everybody's
really
an instructor. Everybody's certified.
Yeah. And that's, part of this too, is everyone trying to figure out, I think, you know, we have a greater access to information than we've ever had before in history, right?
Well, of course, we do.
So like, this is part of, I think, why so many people now talk about situation awareness and actually information theory is now being talked about outside of the 15 people who were involved in, you know what I mean? Like, it's such a small, you know, a lot of people have never even heard of information theory. And then now it's sort of, this stuff is out there now because there's so much technology and so much information and then we have to deal with it and human factors stuff. And it's still screwed up. I mean, even though we were talking about the military spending billions of dollars researching this stuff and how humans interact with machines and the best way to do it so they could do it. The insurgents online classroom stuff that she has, it's a fucking mess. It's so disorganized. It's not intuitive and they do everything on there now. And you're like, this is junk. How is a kid supposed to do it, let alone me?
Right.
She's going, well, I think it's in here. Well, I'm like, this is the least intuitive thing I've ever. How did no someone's making money off of it? You know what I mean?
You got
So it's just, we kind of went to a bunch of different places and a few different spirals, but I think we covered everything. Going to need some after this call. I think we covered a lot and we got into kind of what we talk about in you know, with situational awareness and anticipation, perception and recognition, which I would probably couple those sort of together.
Yeah,
right?
And that's the key. Remember, the reason I'm making a definition is you were asking me to put a spotlight on them.
Yes.
So the spotlight on them is at its lowest elemental form. They are distinct and unique and deliberate. But when we're going at full speed, Brian, there's three of them.
It's just going.
And then when we're going at the expert level, there's one of them.
Yeah.
And it's called situation awareness. So don't come to me and say I'm a situation awareness expert because I took a course.
You can get certified in that. I can get an online certification in that from a group.
Yeah, you can be a priest too. You know what I'm saying?
I am. No. I'm an ordained minister, actually.
I really bet you are.
Officiated one wedding and probably officiating another one maybe the next year. So I went online to the website and I filled out the information and I paid whatever it was and I've got the little card in my wallet. So if anyone runs into me and sees me out there and needs me to perform an emergency a wedding, or I believe it gives me funeral rights as well.
That'll come in handy. So it'll come in handy after my next comment, because a couple of your dear friends just got engaged, and yeah. I want her to rethink it, because I still think she's the Mac Daddy, the Daddy Mac. I keep thinking I may have a chance.
She could do better.
She can do better. Well, I know the guy, so yeah, she can. So, I'm kidding. I jest.
No, he would agree. But
he would violently and vehemently. Yeah, that's great. Hey, here's the thing. Do your own research, you'll come to the same conclusion. And look, every time that I read something online where somebody comes up with a good idea, first go back and see if there's studies about it. And those people that studied it took a long time and a lot of money to come up with it. I'm not saying don't come up with good ideas, but don't throw something at me that was, you know, detailed out 25 years ago as if it's an original idea. You got to do a little bit of the work before you start going to social media. That's all I'm saying.
Well, social media is easier.
It is because you're just on transmit. You can cut out all that receive and listening thing.
Oh, I can choose whatever. I can choose my own adventure. All right. Anything else we need to kind of cover? That we covered a lot, and I want people listening to, you know, reach out with questions that you have. You can always hit up leftofgreg@gmail.com about specific episode questions and everything, and we'd love to get into it. And I'm sure we'll probably give a couple more examples and talk about them on the Patreon side specifically. Yeah, I know the one you did send me, I think, would be good for that.
There's a couple for tomorrow that I think we should add to
a lawsuit. Because someone followed the GPS straight into a body of water, right?
And off a bridge.
Off a
bridge that had been decommissioned and taken down so long ago. But guess what?
We do that all the time. It's the map's fault, not mine.
Yep. You know? You got it.
So, but we can cover that on there. So we did get into a lot. Again, if anyone has any questions, please reach out. If you enjoy it, the episode too, please share it with your friends.
Yes.
Tell people about it. It helps us out a lot to get the word out. Leave a review or a comment or something on whatever podcast player that helps too. We do appreciate it. And don't forget that training changes behavior.
That's all for today, folks. But if you'd like even more content, you can head over to our Patreon page. The link can be found in the episode details. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, follow us on social media, and please tell your friends about the show. Thanks for tuning in, and thank you for your support.